Chris Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Nailers Natter. And what a cracker we have for you this week. This podcast is going to feature an interview with Blackpool's own Ben Gordon. Ben is assistant principal and SLE for maths. And he's come up with, without doubt, the best name for a session at Blackpool's Research Ed this year, when he will be doing Rise and Shine for Rosenshine. So we'll be discussing principles of instruction. His influence is there, and we're talking about Tom Sherrington's book Rosenshine Reordered, which is coming out soon, and the work that he's done with Olle Caviglioli on the five meanings of direct instruction. So before we get into this, just a note that this was recorded during half term last week, and unfortunately I experienced a slight cut out at about 2 minutes into the audio. So if you can just bear with that and enjoy the interview between myself and Mr. Ben Gordon. Okay, welcome to episode 5 of Nailers Natter. This week we welcome Ben Gordon. Ben is an assistant principal leading maths. He's an SLE, he's got a huge Twitter following, and he's very interested in all things research and evidence. Ben is also making his Research Ed debut in Blackpool with us on the 23rd of March, where his presentation, I believe, is entitled Rise and Shine for Rosenshine, which is surely a challenger for the best session name this year. Welcome, Ben.
Hello, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for doing this very much on half term. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Right, so we're straight into what I have been calling the X Factor question. So if you can tell us a little bit more about you, your journey to this point, and your current role.
I've been teaching around about 9 or 10 years now. I started doing the graduate teacher recruitment program after I did my master's degree, where I started to train at Millfield, which is my first school, and my school before Montgomery. And it's quite a funny story, actually. I worked there for a year. I think I was about 21 at the time, and I didn't really take it seriously. I didn't really think teaching was something that I wanted to do. I didn't have the right attitude, and I worked there for the full year, and then in the interview at the end, because I'd worked there for the full year and they'd sort of got to know me, I thought I was going to get the job, and I didn't. And that made me realise how much I wanted to be a teacher, because there was no other maths jobs going at the time, and I was devastated. I remember going home being really upset, and I thought, well, I'm just going to prove them wrong now. So if a job comes up, then I'll be able to apply for it with a bit more confidence. One of the best maths teachers at Millfield sent his notice in to go to Australia. So a job came open, and because I'd sort of changed myself and worked really hard, the head teacher there offered me the job. The rest is history. I've worked there for sort of 9 years. I've been a pupil premium coordinator. I was part of the team that won the National Pupil Premium Award, I think, in 2015. Was then promoted to lead practitioner and became more heavily involved in teaching and learning. Won Blackpool Gazette Inspirational Teacher of the Year in 2016. And then more recently I was seconded one day a week to, I believe, the largest SIF project in the country, which was focusing on maths academic transition between Key Stage 2 and 3, which you'll be familiar with the EES guidance report for that. And then I covered maternity for a year at the same school for the assistant principal leading on teaching and learning for the whole school. And that is my passion, really, is teaching and learning, and become more familiar with evidence-informed practice. And that's sort of my obsession at the moment. Now I'm seconded to Montgomery Academy, which is what I will refer to as a turnaround school. I'm assistant principal, line managing maths, and we're desperate for a solid set of results and gaining some momentum and some inspiration and using some new strategies from the research. So, yeah, that's my journey so far.
Fantastic and very thorough indeed. Thank you for that. The big focus of this podcast, as you know, is to discuss with listeners the one piece of research that has most influenced you, and particularly speaking to teachers who are working day to day in classrooms. So if you could just tell listeners, what is that piece of research?
The piece of research that I've chosen has been the most prevalent to me, which is Barrett Rosenshine's Principles of Instruction. It's a combination and an overlap of research from three different sources, which I believe makes it really, really thorough, but it's also really practical as well. It comes from cognitive science and how we learn, classroom practices of what he refers to as master teachers, and also cognitive support that the research has developed to help students learn complex tasks. And that's what we're interested in. We're interested in how the brain works and how we learn, what do effective teachers do, and what strategies can we put in place to help students learn the complex stuff that we try to teach in our lessons.
Brilliant. So, I mean, this is quite a hot topic, and I know that Tom Sherrington and others do quite a lot of work on this, and I believe there's a book coming out on this kind of theme. So can you remember where and when you read Principles of Instruction?
I was trying to think of this answer, and I can't actually remember when I stumbled upon it. I think the first time I'd heard of Rosenshine was through Ollie Caviglioli's summary. I think he summarised the 10 principles of instruction when he did his Teaching How-To's website. I may have first stumbled across it in Making Every Lesson Count by Sean Allison and Andy Tharby, and I know it's definitely referenced in Hendrick and McPherson's book as well, What Does This Look Like in a Classroom. I can't remember which of those three it was, but because it kept appearing, I thought, well, I need to read it really, because these people seem to think quite highly of it.
Absolutely. So in terms of, we kind of touched on why you read it, but how have you actively used this in the classroom? So I'm looking two ways, Ben, really. How have you used it as a classroom teacher, and how have you sought to kind of influence, obviously now as a senior leader, other members of staff in some of this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's important to mention that when I read it, a lot of it is common sense, and a lot of it, when people read, we'll do a few of the things, if not really, really well, they will definitely do some of them. I think it's important that you don't change too much too soon, and you also give time for things to work as well. I think teachers sometimes could try things for a couple of lessons and then think, oh, that didn't work with that class, so I'm just going to put it in the bin now. I think you need to probably try things for at least 3 weeks with one class, really narrow the focus. So I've named five things that I think has impacted me on quite a lot. So the first one is the sort of weekly and monthly recall and daily reviews. We now have a fortnightly quiz which our whole department use this process, whereby every fortnight the only piece of work that we mark is a quiz which has four sections called the four R's, which are recall, and that will talk about the basic facts about that topic that probably you wouldn't get asked on an exam, but are definitely important. There's recent procedures, which are obviously the meat of the topic that you've been doing recently and trying to find out whether students can actually repeat those processes correctly. There's a reasoning section for higher order thinking. And there's a revision section for topics that were off more than 4 weeks ago, so that we're getting that long-term memory and retrieval practice in there as well. The second thing is my question has definitely got better as a result of reading the research, just because I'm thinking about it a bit more. So asking more questions to more pupils, asking better questions as well. He has some really good question stems, which I would believe fit in with sort of elaborative thinking, how and why questions are connecting ideas, and how are these things the same and how are these things different. That's definitely improved my practice. The third one is atomizing content. So trying to break new concepts into smaller chunks, and probably breaking them into smaller chunks than I'd need to. So Greg Ashman refers to expertise-induced blindness, where we try and think of two steps and then try and think of the step between the steps that often novices just don't have. And that's really, really helped me with developing my sequencing of examples and things like that. The fourth one is example problem pairs. So making sure that when I present some new content that students immediately have some active practice straight away. And that works in two ways. It allows the students to feel confident that they can do it independently once they've seen a worked example. And it also acts as a hinge point in my lesson where I can check that students have really understood the content before I move them on to independent practice so that their task isn't littered with mistakes. And then the fifth one is not to do with classroom practice. It's more to do with people who listen to this making sure that they're aware if they are leaders. We must remember that the principles of instruction apply to adults too. So I believe teacher trainers should read this with their teacher training hat on and absolutely bear all of these principles in mind. So middle leaders should consider the effect that the principles have on your department when you're leading change and introducing new ideas. So if you think of the principles as daily, weekly, monthly reviews, our staff need that, breaking down new ideas and new concepts into small chunks that are easy to acknowledge, checking that all staff understand and that they haven't just interpreted it by themselves, and then scaffolding and moulding, modelling the sort of strategies that you want in place so that they know exactly what that looks like if they're not quick on the uptake. So I thought that was quite interesting to think of the principal's instruction in terms of adults and staff as well, because we learn the same way as children.
Welcome to Naylor's Nattering, musings on evidence-based teaching and professional learning. Follow us on Twitter at PNA1977.
I mean, that's so interesting. I'm sure that you're aware of the Early Careers Framework coming out last week, and a lot of the kind of research behind that, and obviously the stuff that Daniel Mears is doing through Ofsted as well with their evidence summaries. And I think Principles of Instruction features quite heavily on some of that as well. So it is really interesting to get kind of ahead of the curve with that in terms of, you know, providing training for teachers. It's interesting that you
mentioned
that. Absolutely. Yeah, really good. Moving on, how have you shared this research? I know you're quite prominent, well, very prominent on Twitter, amongst other things, but how have you gone about actively sharing this research with fellow teachers?
Yeah, well, I was quite pleased, actually. I'll talk about my old school. At my old school, when I began to lead on teaching and learning, become involved with the teaching and learning leaders, we sent out a teaching and learning newsletter every half term, and I remember sharing the principles of instruction with the staff at Millfield via the newsletter. And it got a really good response, especially the Owen Cav sort of summary of it. Teachers are very time poor, so to ask the teachers to read the 32-page document is some staff just won't do it. They just think they haven't got time, which is a shame because it's such well time spent. That is the most enriching 32 pages I've read. And I think there is an article for, is it the American Federation of Teachers, that has summarised it into less pages than that, which I would recommend people read as well. So sharing it in the newsletter, we discussed it at a teaching and learning meeting. We called it Leading and Learning in Lancashire. So myself and Vicky Thompson set that up, and we had various schools. Simon Cox used to come from your school, and we used to discuss those kind of ideas there. And as a new leader at a new school, what I didn't want to do is go in and overface them with research, because there can be a snobbery behind research as well. And what I wanted to do is to distill it and actually just introduce sort of one or two ideas at a time. Now, at our new school, we have a framework for teaching called Excel.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable how well that links in with the principles of instruction. So rather than actually name the research at the moment, we're just talking about how we can introduce these ideas. And have actually just this week sent out the AFT article to all staff, and I send out a blog every week, a maths blog via email. But I think this half term, I would like them to read Principles of Instruction over the half term, and then we're going to discuss it in departmental meetings and talk about how it links in with what we're already doing.
Fantastic. That's just a lot of great stuff there, and I'm just nodding my head and agreeing with a lot of the stuff you said there about, you know, there can be, as you put it there, a snobbery attached to research that, you know, we are almost evangelising about the use of research, and it needs to become sort of more from the teachers, involving them in the process of kind of distilling that and using it in their own classroom.
Yeah, I think maybe working backwards is actually a good way to do it. So we give them some ideas, we say try these things, then we give them the research after it, and then they can nod along saying, oh well, yeah, this has worked, I can see why this research paper is useful now, rather than maybe the other way around. I don't know whether that would be a bit of a backward strategy that might work better.
No, I think we would agree with that. I mean, broadly speaking, a lot of the courses that we've done through the research school has involved an awful lot of reading. And you mentioned before about teachers being quite time poor. What we've found to be quite effective is actually, you know, within course time and whatever sessions that we're doing, give people time to read that and apply it to their pupils in their classroom, rather than us kind of standing at the front and saying, this is what you should do. Definitely.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so our kind of call to action point now. So if you're a teacher reader listening to this podcast, why should they read Principles of Instruction?
I feel like if you're a classroom teacher, then it's your responsibility to make sure you have a really clear, I wouldn't say ideology, but certainly a clear framework of what excellent teaching looks like. And I think this provides it. In a nutshell, so you can keep falling back on it, you can keep self-assessing yourself against the 10 principles. It aligns perfectly with other things that are very useful, very prominent at the moment, things that I'm fascinated by, so cognitive science, cognitive load theory, making sure memory and retrieval is prominent in your thinking and in your curriculum, explaining things really, really well, and then the stages of practice. So for me, it's important that teachers have this to self-assess against, not as a checklist, but certainly as some guidance. And I think it's incredibly important as a leader that you have a really clear idea of what teaching looks like within a framework, excellent teaching looks like within a framework, so that, again, you can guide the people you're working with towards that excellence, really.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, just moving on to the second section of the podcast now. Obviously, we are delighted that you are going to be joining us on the 23rd of March at Research Egg Blackpool. So I've mentioned it in the introduction. I'm not sure whether that is still the title for your presentation or not, but can you tell us what your role is going to be at Research Egg Blackpool and what you're going to be talking about in your presentation?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I came to Research Egg Blackpool last year. That was first and only research ed that I've attended, and I was just blown away by it. It was obviously information overload. I took lots of notes, read lots of blogs afterwards, but that Saturday, that one day, was very, very informative and enriching. So I've decided to take the plunge and present, which is quite daunting. When I've had a look at the maths lineup and who else is presenting there. But my session is going to be called Rise and Shine to Rose and Shine, how Rose and Shine awakened my maths teaching practice. And it's basically going to be referring to the 10 principles and what that looks like in my classroom or in our classrooms at Montgomery, which again is a turnaround school where it requires improvement. We need to improve things. And it will appeal to probably all teachers who are interested in finding out more about the principles and for practical applications. I will often refer to my own practice and how this has changed over time because of these principles. So there will be a math-specific element in each principle too, but I will be mixing in some cognitive load theory and research on feedback too, as well as finishing off with some educational research pros and cons for people who are just beginning to engage with it from my personal point of view.
Brilliant. And I mean, you mentioned there that the range of people that we've got speaking, and both Simon and I, if I can speak from on this podcast, felt it was quite important that we had, you know, a local flavour to the research event. And you mentioned that you've been to last year's and you haven't yet presented at any others, but it's really, really important to us that we have classroom practitioners from Blackpool talking about how they use these principles in their classrooms in our context. So it's going to be really, really interesting, and I'm definitely going to be coming along to that one, assuming that I haven't got to go and sort out some chairs or something in other rooms.
Thank you, I appreciate that. You might be the only person that's there, so...
Definitely not, and we know this for a fact, because obviously listeners may be aware, if we're talking in a local context, that Ben has done quite a few sessions for sort of local teachers, and they have been, you know, really, really well attended, and the feedback has been superb. I happen to know that for a fact, for things that you've done in the town. So, yeah, there'll be a lot of people who'll be interested in that, definitely.
Fantastic, thank you, appreciate that.
Okay, so just the last question from me. Where can people find a little bit more about you? You mentioned about your blog before. Obviously, we can find you on Twitter and any other kind of areas. We can find more about you.
Yeah, I do write a blog. I've been more time poor this year than ever before with my new role. So moving school is really, really difficult, and moving to a new role you've never done before is really difficult. So I would love to have blogged a little bit more this year, but unfortunately I haven't. But I do have a blog. I started to write an alphabetical signpost to teacher excellence, which is basically like an alphabetical bibliography of sort of research terms, educational terms, and where you can find good blogs, good information, good articles, etc. So I think I've got up to G so far, and that's sort of going to be a whole career's worth of work, and eventually I think it'll never be ending, really. And then I've done some work with Ollie Cavigliola recently, so if you go onto his site, oliecav.com, I've actually done a poster with him with regards to Rosenshine and his five meanings of direct instruction. And I've also written some work about the late Siegfried Gengelmann, who believed sadly passed this week, which is really, really sad, because his work is so, so interesting to help disadvantaged students. I've done some work on that, and I've recently written an article for Teach Secondary, which again was about Engelmann's direct instruction and a little bit about my ideology with regards to education. And I think at Research Ed I'll be releasing something new for the maths community, so watch this space. It will be with regards to one of the principles, but it will be something that all maths teachers can use and hopefully add to as well. So I'm not going to give too much more information away, but that is something that I'm hoping to release at Research Ed Blackpool in March.
Fantastic. It's almost like we scripted that, a cliffhanger to the end of the Nailers Natter podcast. So this could be a new feature, Ben. We'll try and get this in every from now on. Right, just to say that we'll put links to all the papers that Ben has mentioned, and we'll put links to his blog and to Twitter on the kind of description of the podcast. So it just remains for me to say a massive thank you to Ben Gordon for giving up his time on half term. We look forward to seeing you on the 23rd of March in Blackpool, Ben.
Thank you very much. And the last thing I want to say is, the work that you guys are doing at the research school is absolutely fantastic, particularly for Blackpool, but as a network as well. So if I could advise anybody throughout the country who listens to this podcast, try and get involved in the research school, try and attend the courses there, because they are so, so invaluable to spread good practice across your area.
That's very kind of you to say so. Thanks again, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye now.
And I'm sure you'll agree, Ben made a fantastic guest there. All the papers and books that Ben talked about in the podcast there will be made as links in the description of the podcast, which is available on the Anchor FM app. If you would like to see Ben at Research Ed with his Rise and Shine for Rosenshine, then the programme will be coming out very soon as the date rapidly approaches the 23rd of March. You will also be able to see Ollie Cavigliola and others on the 23rd of March in Blackpool. Once again, thank you very much for listening. Next week's guest is Bethan Hindley from the Teacher Development Trust, who will be talking about her work as a maths teacher and the work she did abroad in Brazil. So look forward to that one very much. Once again, thank you for listening and see you next time.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.